This is a recording of the open meeting of the Federal Election Commission held on December 14th, 2007. Should you have questions after listening to this recording, please call the FEC at 1-800-424-9530 or email us at info@fec.gov.
The next item on our agenda is Draft Advisory Opinion 2000-34 involving Representative Jesse L. Jackson, Jr. Mr. Vice Chairman, we have a late submitted document.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move suspension of our rules concerning the timely submission of documents so that we may consider a memorandum containing this draft advisory opinion. It's agenda document 0793.
Very good. The Vice Chairman is so moved. Any discussion on the motion? Hearing none, all in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Madam Secretary, the Vice Chairman's motion has been adopted by a vote of 5-0. We have Joshua Bloom and Ron Catwan from the General Counsel's Office. Counsel, please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Jesse Jackson, Jr. of the 2nd Congressional District of Illinois requested the advisory opinion before you in agenda document number 07-93. The request seeks confirmation that Representative Jackson may appear on a billboard located in Representative Jackson's district with a candidate for local office in order to endorse that candidate in advance of a primary election in which both Representative Jackson and the local candidate will appear on the ballot. The local candidate's campaign organization would pay for the billboard with funds that were raised in accordance with Illinois law, but that do not necessarily comply with the amount limitations and source prohibitions of the Act. The draft concludes that, based on the evidence provided, Representative Jackson may appear on the billboard despite its being financed with non-federal funds because the billboard is not a coordinated communication under Section 109.21 of the Commission's regulations, and hence is not an in-kind contribution to Representative Jackson. Specifically, the draft determines that the billboard is not a coordinated communication because it satisfies an exemption from the definition of coordinated communication that applies to public communications in which federal candidates endorse other candidates unless the communications promote, support, attack, or oppose the endorsing federal candidate or another candidate who seeks election to the same office as the endorsing candidate. We received no comments on the draft, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Very good. I will note from the expression on some of the people in the audience, yes, there is roofing going on above your heads. So that is the hammering sound above. Commissioner Von Spakovsky.
Mr. Chairman, this draft opinion from the Office of General Counsel is a very straightforward application of the candidate endorsement exception in our coordinated regulations, so I'm happy to move that we adopt it, and that's agenda document 07-93.
Very good. Commissioner Von Spakovsky is so moved. Any discussion on the motion? Hearing none, all in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? Madam Secretary, Commissioner Von Spakovsky's motion has been adopted by a vote of 5-0. Counsel, thank you. The next item on our agenda involves Draft Advisory Opinion 2007-31 involving the John Edwards for President campaign. And Mr. Vice Chairman, we have a late submitted document on this.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move suspension of our rules concerning the timely submission of documents so that we may consider two memoranda setting forth alternative drafts of Advisory Opinion 2007-31, agenda document 0789 and 0789A.
Very good. The Vice Chairman is so moved. Any discussion on the motion? Hearing none, all in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Madam Secretary, the Vice Chairman's motion has been adopted by a vote of 5-0. We have Eric Hallstrom and Amy Rothstein from the General Counsel's Office. Counsel, please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The draft of Advisory Opinion 2007-31 set forth in Agenda Document 07-89 responds to a request from the Principal Campaign Committee for John Edwards for President. The request asks whether under the Matching Payment Act, the committee may submit for matching funds earmarked contributions that were forwarded to the committee by checks drawn on Act Blue's account. Act Blue is a non-connected political committee registered with the commission. The draft concludes that the earmarked contributions that Act Blue forwards to the committee by check drawn on Act Blue's account are not matchable because they fall within the category of contributions that are specifically within the exclusion or that the Matching Payment Act and commission regulations specifically exclude from the definition of qualifying for matching funds. The commission received a large number of comments, including comments from the requester, and I would be pleased to try to address any questions the commission might have.
Thank you. comments or discussion? Commissioner Weintraub.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think in some ways this was a difficult request for a lot of us because the policy arguments are pretty compelling here. And hundreds of commenters, not our usual commenters, but the kind of people who comment when Daily Kos puts something up on his website, and a lot of people who are steered to make comments from the Edwards website as well, ordinary citizens contacted us by email and said, why shouldn't my contribution be matched? I made a contribution to John Edwards. I happened to go through Act Blue, but why should my contribution be treated differently than other folks' contributions who went through the Edwards website directly? And in fact, for at least a period of time, people who went to the website of the Edwards campaign directly were routed to Act Blue in order to make contributions. A lot of people pointed out that in an age of internet fraud, they felt safe using the Act Blue website, and that way they didn't have to worry about whether this was JohnEdwards.com or JohnEdwards.net, or was it a fraudulent website? And we have seen that in the political arena. We've seen folks try and set up fraudulent campaign websites for the purpose of grabbing people's campaign, their credit card information, and defrauding them that way. And people said, well, we feel safe using ActBlue. It's just like PayPal. And indeed, we do recognize PayPal and match contributions that are made through PayPal. And for the people who are making these contributions, it felt an awful lot like PayPal. They didn't know the difference. A lot of people didn't seem to realize that ActBlue was a political committee at all, which it is. That's not, some people said, don't make ActBlue a political committee. That's not what we're deciding here. ActBlue already is a political committee. They voluntarily registered as one. But people don't think of it in the same way as a political committee. And encouraging small donors and encouraging the use of the presidential funding system at all are both goals of the Act that I personally am very supportive of. Now, when I first looked at our law and regulations, I have to admit, I felt that my hands were tied by the regulations that we have on the books, which were written 30 years ago and clearly did not anticipate an entity such as Act Blue because the internet didn't exist back then. But I felt that the words of the regulation really kind of tied my hands. But I was really moved by the volume of the comments and by the arguments that people made. Comments by people like Clark Burnett, who sent us an email saying, don't kill off one of the few ways average Joes like me have a voice in the process, in the political process. And I really don't want to do that. So I went back and looked at the regulation again and found a slight ambiguity in there, a way that I thought we could look at the law and the regs and say, well, maybe if it is a little ambiguous because they use the term committee, they don't use the term political committee in the regs, maybe that gives us an opening to take a look at the policy considerations and come to a different conclusion here. And I think another way that we could look at this is that particular regulation is supposed to be implementing a section of the statute that talks about transfer of funds from one political committee to another. And as the Edwards campaign pointed out to us, and they're right, transfer is a term of art under the Federal Election Campaign Act, and it refers to money that's moved from one political committee to another affiliated political committee. If John Edwards wanted to move money from his Senate campaign to his presidential campaign, that would be a transfer. And that's not what we're looking at here. So I have proposed an alternative, and I don't know whether it will get any support, but I think that in any event, this request points out to us that, as inevitably happens when some of our regulations sit on the books for 30 years, we need to take another look at this regulation and need to revamp it for the future because it clearly was not intended to cover this situation.
Thank you. Other thoughts or comments? I mean, I can chime in. I like Commissioner Weintraub have some sympathy for the situation, or the concerns raised by the commenters, and we got many, because I think that the one of the things that is there's not enough of in American politics right now is the active participation of individuals of modest means. And we have done a number of things while I've been here, and the agency did a number of things before I arrived, to try and facilitate the ability of individuals to operate in the political system despite a large and complex regulatory regime. One of the prices of a large and complex regulatory regime is that it prohibits activity that people would otherwise like to engage in, and sometimes there are people that we like and would like to have active, but the law does not permit it. And so I approach this again with some sympathy towards the participants in this. That said, I think I diverge from Commissioner Weintraub somewhat in that I think the statute and the regulation do directly address this particular situation, and I am less convinced that the regulations were not mindful of something very similar to Act Blue. While obviously Act Blue was not in the minds of the Commission 30 years ago when they did this, it does seem the way the regulation was crafted that they were mindful of political committees collecting contributions from individuals and forwarding them on, and that seems to be what's going on here. And so I have somewhat more difficulty deciding that the regulations that are on the books right now are inapplicable. Maybe the concerns that caused the Commission to create those regulations should be reconsidered and we should change them, but I'm a little less persuaded that they simply were designed for a problem utterly unlike the one we're looking at today. The other thing that I am mindful of is that an organization like organizations could do things that are like this. Our regulations do not prohibit this kind of activity done differently. Act Blue could be a vendor, and the Edwards Committee argues that they are like vendors, but in several crucial ways they are not. And it were Act Blue to be a vendor, they could do this, but they're not trying to be a vendor, they're trying to be something else. Similarly, people, you know, we've been, the people could, you know, contribute directly to the Edwards campaign over the Internet, and while there is a risk of some confusion as to who is who out there, I'm not sure having political committees serve as the collection system for those for the candidates necessarily takes us very far away from that concern. I think there's a not unreasonable argument raised by the Edwards Committee that these are transfers and that these are not transfers as that term is defined. Although I think that the term is used somewhat more broadly in some other contexts and. Certainly, the movement of funds from the committee to Edwards in many ways looks very much like what our regulations are prescribing in this context. So that was the reason why I initially supported the staff draft before it went out on Blue and why I'm finding it somewhat hard to construe an alternative approach as better, although I do have, at the end of the day, some misgivings that the consequence is that the people who wanted to participate in this way, who are not, forming the cornerstone of the risks of corruption that guided the crafting of the statute, will be thwarted or hindered in some way in their ability to do so. Other thoughts or comments? Commissioner Walther.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I struggled with this one because my natural inclination is as others, and that's to make it as easy as possible for people to participate and to easily get online and feel safe, as Commissioner Weintraub said, about this money's going to go exactly where I want it to go. And so I struggled with how we could make it work, but given our current regulation, we'd have to pretty much override our regulation here with an advisory opinion, and that isn't the way I think we ought to proceed. But I think if we were drafting, my guess is if we were drafting another regulation now, we would figure out a way to make it work with the electronic means that we are now becoming familiar with using to an increasing degree. So I reluctantly find myself in a position of finding that in this particular case, the request should not be granted under our current law. But I want to give admiration to Commissioner Weintraub for her effort, because I do think that's probably the best argument that could be made, and it's just, to me, I'm not able to be persuaded today.
Other thoughts? Commissioner Von Spakovsky.
I have to agree with the chairman and Commissioner Walther. One of the comments I saw on the Daily Cuss was that the OGC draft was too literal an interpretation of the statute. Well, that's exactly the problem. The statute is perfectly clear on this issue. And I mean, you know, I completely agree. The statute, when it was written, was not written with the situation in mind, because at the time this was written, the internet didn't exist, and this kind of contribution method was not around. And I think when a statute is ambiguous or unclear, then we do have room, as the agency given the authority by Congress to interpret it, to come up with regulations and interpretations that, for example, and we've been very good about this, that allows for changes in technology. And we have done that when we've been able to do it, and I think everybody here agrees with that. But when the statute is absolutely clear, an agency does not have the ability to ignore the statute or override it. And the statute says, quote, funds received by a political committee which are transferred to that committee from another committee are not matchable. And ActBlue is a registered political committee with us. And while I give you kudos, Commissioner Weintraub, on your creativeness, I think your alternate draft was quite a stretch. I don't like the result here. I think we should encourage this kind of innovation in the political process. But this is one of those unfortunate situations where the agency doesn't have the authority to change this. Congress has the ability to change the statute if they want to allow this. But the statute and our regulation is so clear that I just don't see a way of doing anything other than adopting the draft that the General Counsel has provided to us.
Okay. Vice Chairman Mason.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I agree with what Commissioner Von Spakovsky just said. I just want to make a couple of other brief notes, but just to summarize that our ability to provide flexibility is constrained by the statute. And I think most of the time we are better served by a literal reading than by a non-literal reading of the statute as well. I want to note one thing that is apparent to me but hasn't been discussed and is also material to how far we go, and that is that, as I understand it, because of some prior advisory opinions that we had issued, the Edwards campaign was told during the time they were doing this that contributions received through ActBlue were not matchable. Is that correct?
That is our understanding, yes.
And who told them that?
How did we find the general
counsel? ActBlue advised them of that. Is that correct?
That's correct.
All right. So they were told, and this went on for several months, and despite having been advised about it, they went ahead with that activity, advised that it wasn't matchable. They went ahead with that activity. Now, I take it what was going on at the time is the Edwards campaign thought they wouldn't be applying for matching funds, and so it wouldn't matter. So I can understand why they now come back. But I just want to note that in terms of people's expectations, that at least in terms of the Edwards campaign, they were told what ActBlue believed the consequence to be at the time. The second thing I want to note is I agree with what I believe all of my colleagues have said about promoting flexibility and promoting small donors, but I just want to raise one caution about the issue of political committees bundling money to other political committees. When we look at ActBlue, it looks fine, because ActBlue supports any Democrat, and nobody really cares. I mean, you know, Republicans want to support Republicans and Democrats, but ActBlue apparently does not have any agenda other than the broadest possible agenda. However, if we were to approve this activity as to ActBlue, there would be nothing stopping a political committee that had a far narrower and perhaps far more controversial agenda from doing the same thing. One of my former colleagues used to like to posit activity by the Osama bin Laden Missile Corporation, which, if it existed, would be eligible to have a PAC for its American employees, and they could bundle contributions to the candidate of their choice. Or it might be Enron, to choose perhaps a more likely and recent activity. And if the Enron Corporation, if they were to revive PAC, were to bundle a whole lot of money and give it to particular candidates, people might be a little bit concerned. Frankly, I would think that was okay, all right? But my point is that the policy implications of that sort of activity would be very different than from activity with a group such as Act Blue. And so I think we need to be careful about the policy implications when we take this one political committee that everybody views as kind of an apple pie type of committee and craft a rule which would then be used by other committees. And so while I agree that it would be a good thing to provide even more opportunities, and the chairman's right that the commission has been, you know, trying to do this progressively over the years, for small donors to make contributions to political committees and for them to be matched if the candidates are in the public funding program, I don't think that that policy goal should simply knock down every other concern out there in the statute. And I think that's just the one issue, that if we move forward in that policy area in a regulation, or if Congress does by legislation, we would need to think about the implications of other types of political committees engaging in this activity.
No, I think that's very helpful, and it certainly was one of the things that I thought about, and the example I used actually was the tobacco industry, which is a controversial industry and one that is politically active and has political action committees, and they presumably could also, were this to be the rule, ask individuals to make contributions to candidates, collect those together, and deliver a very large check far above the contribution limits to the candidate, reflecting the contributions of all those individual contributors. And so there's and that's sort of why I guess these things get sorted out in regulations, and that may in fact have been part of the although I suspect other things were going on that underlay some of the regulatory work in this area as well. But those are certainly well worth thinking through. So often it's the consequences and other circumstances of the conclusions we reach in advisory opinions that occupy much of the time as we sort of sort through what the right answer is. Vice Chairman Mason.
If there aren't other statements, I'd be happy to move approval of draft advisory opinion 2007-31 as set forth in agenda document 0789.
Very good. The Vice Chairman is so moved. Discussion on the motion? Commissioner Weintraub.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, I won't insist on a vote on my motion because I can see it wouldn't do very well on my draft. I do want to point out that, it's limited to non-connected committees acting merely as conduits, and B, that political committees do bundle contributions for political candidates all the time, and there's nothing wrong with it. It's perfectly legal. You know, it happens, and including some with a particular agenda. Emily's List springs to mind. They're pretty successful at it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's not really what we're talking about here. We're talking about whether in the unusual circumstance, once every 4 years, of bundling contributions to presidential candidates, are those small donations that are, in this case, routed merely as a conduit through another committee, are they going to be matchable? That's really the only question that's on the table. But I respect my colleague's reading of the regulation, which was, you know, my initial reading of the regulation as well. I thought there was a little bit more room for maneuverability in there than my colleagues do, but I respect their judgment on that. I'll vote against the motion.
Other discussion? Okay. All in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed?
No.
Madam Secretary, the Vice Chairman's motion has been adopted by a vote of 4-1 with Commissioner Weintraub dissenting. Counsel, thank you very much. The next item on our agenda involves draft advisory opinion 2007-27. We have alternative drafts. Unfortunately, there's no late submitted document here, so we will turn to S.S. Farah and Amy Rothstein from the General Counsel's Office. Counsel, please proceed at your convenience.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good afternoon, Commissioners. The agenda document before you is two alternative draft advisory opinions in response to request from Act Blue. Act Blue is a non-connected political committee and plans to solicit, receive, and forward contributions designated for specific separate segregated funds under two proposed fundraising programs. Under Program 1, Act Blue will solicit the general public for contributions to SSFs, and under Program 2, Act Blue will solicit the restricted classes of SSFs connected organizations for contributions to those SSFs. Draft A concludes that both Program 1 and Program 2 are permissible, but Act Blue must implement and maintain effective policies to ensure the independence of its solicitations under Program 1 if it includes the same SSF in both programs. Draft B concludes that Program 1 is impermissible and that Program 2 is permissible, but only to the extent that the costs associated with Act Blue's activities under Program 2 do not result in prohibitive, excessive in-kind contributions. We received several comments on the drafts, one of which is from the requesters. I'll be happy to answer any questions you may have. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you. Comments? Discussion? Motions? Someone must have some thoughts.
Mr. Chairman, we'd had some informal discussions beforehand about where four votes may lie on this, and I think that really is the question before us. Policy-wise, I think it would be appropriate to allow both programs, and I did note to my colleagues in the council's office that we had a somewhat similar request from the National Restaurant Association a few months ago, which I voted to approve, but which the commission as a whole did not vote to approve, and I viewed this as somewhat similar to that. In that case, it was the SSF that was proposing to solicit on behalf of another committee. Here, it's another committee proposing to solicit on behalf of the SSF. I did not see a substantial difference in that. And so I would be willing to vote to support a draft that that approved both programs. I'd also note that I'm skeptical even about the coordination issue or the coordination condition or the firewall condition that's placed in here. In part because our coordination regulations go to communications most specifically, and also because it appears to me that there wouldn't be any danger in the SSF in essence advising Act Blue about how to solicit other people. I agree that if they asked Act Blue to do it, that Act Blue's solicitation would be an in-kind contribution. But I don't. But given that requirement or condition, if that were met, I wouldn't see any need to have different people within Act Blue working on the two programs.
Okay. Thank you. Other thoughts, Commissioner Weintraub.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was tired from so much talking before. I thought I'd sit back, but okay. I support draft B. I think that this is, I guess, sort of a flip side of things that weren't anticipated in the internet age. When Congress created PACs as a separate segregated funds as a legal entity and said they can be subsidized in their administrative costs by a connected organization that otherwise would not be able to subsidize the operations of a political committee, they made a trade-off there. They said, yes, the corporation, the labor union can subsidize the operations, can pay for the administrative costs, but then you have to limit the solicitations to your restricted class of executives and members. I don't think anybody anticipated that while it's not prohibited for outsiders to contribute to these SSFs, doesn't now happen all that often, I think, I don't think anybody ever anticipated a situation where there would be wide-scale solicitations of everybody in America through the internet to an SSF that has its operations in part subsidized by an impermissible source. So I think, you know, people might want to think hard about whether that makes sense and whether I think people in Congress might want to think about that, whether they that fits in with the whole regulatory regime to enable someone to solicit on the internet broadly for an SSF. And I think in my view, it's really not in sync with what Congress had in mind. So I think draft B, which says, yes, you can solicit the restricted class, but no, you can't solicit all of America, is more closely in sync with the regime that Congress had in mind.
Other thoughts? Commissioner Von Spakovsky.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I'm sure Commissioner Weintraub, that pounding on the roof was not a comment on what you were saying.
Always worried when the pounding comes from above.
I agree with the Vice Chairman in that this request from ActBlue, to me, from a legal substantive standpoint, is almost the same as an advisory opinion request we received last year in the National Restaurant Association. And in that one, I, as the Vice Chairman, supported a draft response that would have allowed them to engage in this behavior. That lost. For that reason, I can't vote to adopt draft A because I think it would be fundamentally unfair for us last year to have told the National Restaurant Association that they can't engage in this behavior and then yet today vote to tell ActBlue that they can engage in this behavior. And I don't think as a matter of fundamental fairness and equity that we can do that. So, I mean, I'm not prepared to support draft A for that particular reason.
Good. Other thoughts, suggestions? Commissioner Walther?
I'll be supporting draft B as well for the reason stated. The concern I had regarding draft A is the closeness involved just seems to me to be, as Commissioner Weintraub said, to be beyond the pale of what was envisioned when the statute was adopted. And at least with Act B, we allow them to work with the class, but also the in-kind contribution, I think, is limited to $5,000. And I could certainly live with that. So I'm inclined to support draft B.
Okay.
And I understood you had some reservations about draft B. If you have, let's interested to hear your comments. We have not had time to talk about that.
Yeah, I'm unhappy with everything, but that's the state I find myself in life right now. So.
Sorry to open up the question.
But and as I've expressed individually to some of the commissioners, and will happily do so here publicly. I mean, I think that there are parallels or similarities with the situation we faced with the Restaurant Association, and I had opposed their going forward with their plan then, and I think that similarly would oppose ActBlue going forward with a similar plan here. So I am unable to support draft A. I think in part. For the reasons that are in some way similar to what the reasons I expressed in the Restaurant Association and my sense of Commissioner Weintraub, I think, put it reasonably, which is that, you know, what the nature and source of the statutory their structure here. Draft B, comes closer to, I think, a reasonable reading of the law as I see it. There are elements I have some misgivings about, but if that were the one, that we may end up deadlocked as we did in the Restaurant Association. If it were possible that four commissioners supported draft B, I would join to make a fourth, so that we would be able to issue a decision in this and overlook whatever misgivings I might have about some of the more minor twists and turns to it. But I am somewhat unclear whether Commissioner Von Spakovsky's decision to vote against draft A leaves him wanting to support B, or whether we simply are at a point of unable to find four commissioners for either version.
Well, Mr. Chairman, my question is, what changes would you like to see in draft B? Because I don't think I've heard that.
We got a long day ahead of us. I would suggest for the economy a need to sort through both this agenda and for those of you who are members of the public, we move to executive session after this, and so this is only the precursor to another set of discussions we're going to have a little later on. So I would leave my comments where they are. Commissioner Weintraub.
Well, unless the Vice Chairman wants a vote on Draft A, I'll move Draft B.
Vice Chairman Mason.
Mr. Chairman, I would be willing to vote for Draft B in order to allow them to do half of what I think they ought to be able to do. If that, through some combination, will create four votes, I'm willing to do that. If I'm going to do that, I'm going to want to vote on Draft A. If not, I don't need it. You know, I just want sort of the record to be clear what my preference would have been if my vote is necessary to secure adoption of Draft B.
Yeah, and in that light, I mean, there have been a number of points. You know, it's funny. I tell people sometimes that this is an agency where bipartisanship works, where people are forced for the agency to function across party lines. And one of the ways in which that, and they look at me like I'm a crazy person, right? So, but it's true because I live it, right? And one of the reasons why that's been true while I've been here is that people. The commissioners have been willing to accept something that is reasonable but is not ideal in their mind, and I am willing to do that here. I think that in part because there's a sense that there is that, you know, we don't get to, you know, have the world look exactly the way we'd like it to look, and there is a need to compromise to achieve the effective functioning of this agency. And so if my vote is necessary, important to get a fourth vote to provide advice and approve at least what is in B, then I will do that. And I think that so as a consequence, I think it would be valuable for you to make a motion as to A, so that at least we can have a record vote on that. And I think that it will make clear that there is this latent question, that there are a number of commissioners at the agency who believe the law should be more expansive than others, and that this is a matter we will probably be revisiting, the agency will be revisiting in the future as well. So that may be the most orderly way to proceed. Mr. Vice Chairman?
I move approval of Draft A.
Okay. The Vice Chairman is so moved. Discussion on the motion? Hearing none, all in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
Nay.
Madam, you're abstaining. Commissioner Vonspakovsky will abstain. Okay, Madam Secretary, the Vice Chairman Vice Chairman's motion fails with one vote in favor, his own, three votes in opposition, myself, Commissioner Weintraub, and Commissioner Walther, and Commissioner Vonspakovsky abstaining. Commissioner Weintraub.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move Draft B.
Okay. Commissioner Weintraub has so moved. Discussion on the motion? Hearing none, all in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? Madam Secretary, Commissioner Weintraub's motion has been adopted by a vote of 5-0. And so that brings this matter to a close. Council, thank you for your assistance. The next item on our agenda involves Draft Advisory Opinion 2007-28. We again have alternative drafts and a late submitted document.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move approval, suspension of our rules concerning the timely submission of documents so that we may consider a memorandum setting forth Draft Advisory Opinion 2007-28 or alternative drafts. It's Agenda Document 0791.
Okay. The Vice Chairman is so moved. Discussion on the motion? Hearing none, all in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? Madam Secretary, the Vice Chairman's motion has been adopted by a vote of 5-0. We have here, somewhat surprisingly, Adam Schwartz from the General Counsel's Office and Ron Catlin. And for those of you who are not insiders, Mr. Schwartz usually presents himself in the context of enforcement actions. He is, in fact, one of our lead enforcement attorneys, and we appreciate his willingness to step in and help out on this advisory opinion.
It was Counsel? A pleasure to do so. Good afternoon, Commissioners. Representatives Kevin McCarthy and Devin Nunez requested the advisory opinion before you in Agenda Document 0791. The requesters seek permission to raise funds on behalf of a ballot initiative committee formed to support the qualification and passage of a redistricting ballot initiative appearing on either the California statewide primary or general election ballot. The Office of General Counsel prepared two alternative draft advisory opinions. Draft A concludes that Representatives McCarthy and Nunez may, subject to the conditions set forth in 2 U.S.C. 441 IE4, raise funds beyond federal limits for redistricting ballot initiative committees that are neither directly nor indirectly established, financed, maintained, or controlled by, or acting on behalf of, either office holder, and are organizations described in Section 501C and exempt from taxation under Section 501A of the Internal Revenue Code. Although Representatives McCarthy and Nunez are federal office holders and thus subject to the general prohibition against raising funds outside the Act's contribution limits and source prohibitions in connection with an election for federal or non-federal office, including funds for any federal election activity, 2 U.S.C. 441 IE 4 A and B provide specific exemptions that would permit Representatives McCarthy and Nunez to make certain solicitations on behalf of 501C tax-exempt organizations. Draft B concludes that Representatives McCarthy and Nunez may freely raise funds for ballot initiative committees not established, financed, maintained, or controlled by either office holder for the purpose of supporting the qualification and passage of a redistricting ballot initiative, because the activity is not in connection with an election for purposes of Section 441 IE. Draft B bases this conclusion on the statutory and regulatory definitions of the term election, which define election in terms of contests for public office and do not reference ballot initiatives or referenda. Thus, 2 U.S.C. 441 IE 1 A and B would not restrict Representatives McCarthy and Nunez from raising non-federal funds on behalf of a redistricting ballot initiative committee not established, financed, maintained, or controlled by either one of them. We have received one comment on the drafts, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Discussion? Comments? Commissioner Weintraub.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is not the first time that we've had to grapple with ballot initiative committees and whether they were contemplated by Congress at all, and if so, when they passed BCRA, what they intended to do about them, and whether they meant to limit federal office holders in their from soliciting funds on behalf of ballot initiative committees, which are state entities, and sometimes get involved in federal election activities, in that they do get out the vote activities, they might do voter registration. They do the sort of things that federal officials are normally not allowed under BCRA to solicit soft money to do. Now, we were faced with this question in the ballot initiative committees in the Berman Doolittle AO, which we resolved through sort of an odd technique of giving a very short answer and then everybody wrote separate opinions as to how they got there, and perhaps that's where we'll end up today. I had hoped early on that we might be able to just kind of hop over that difficult question of whether ballot initiative, fundraising for ballot initiative committees are in connection with an election or not in connection with an election, because I had a feeling we were going to have a hard time getting to a consensus on that. But I've been convinced after discussions with my, and that was what motivated draft A, I've been convinced after reviewing the comments and discussions with my colleagues that we probably can't avoid the question. And for me, I think that they are in connection with an election. In Berman Doolittle, we had the fortunate but unusual circumstance that the ballot initiative was on the ballot on a day when there were no candidates on the ballot. And certainly I understand the argument that we have always defined election as a candidate election, but when people go to the polls on election day and they get out their ballot and it's got initiatives and it's got their candidates all on the same thing, it's really all part of the same election. And if people are raising funds for helping to get people to the polls for doing federal election activity in connection with what happens on that election day, I think that is in connection with an election. And I think at first I thought that the general solicitation exception of 441 IE 4A applied, but I've been convinced by the comments that under our regulations that it doesn't. However, I do think that the exception in 441 IE 4B great citation, does apply, which permits federal candidates and office holders to make a solicitation explicitly to obtain funds for carrying out Class 1 and Class 2 federal election activities, or for an entity whose principal purpose is to conduct such activities if the solicitation is made only to individuals and the amount solicited from any individual during any calendar year does not exceed $20,000. That pretty plainly says and shows that Congress anticipated that they would be fundraising for federal election activities for 501Cs that do federal election activities subject to these limits. So I can get there, which is actually a fair amount of leeway for the candidates. They can raise up to $20,000 from individuals, which is a lot more than one could normally raise under the federal limits. But I don't think that I can get any further than that.
Okay, thank you very much. Other comments, questions, thoughts, suggestions? Vice Chairman Mason.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have previously taken the position and still do that a referendum or ballot initiative is not an election. And as I laid out in a couple of opinions previous, the commission's rules refer to elections as the process of electing candidates. Candidates aren't at issue in ballot initiatives and referenda, and indeed the Supreme Court in the Bilotti decision elsewhere has laid out different standards for treatment of referenda and candidate elections. And for that reason, I would be willing to answer yes that the candidates involved here may raise funds for this ballot committee. However, as we have done before, I would be willing to support an opinion that was more limited than either of the ones we have before us, which simply said that you may raise this money from individuals in amounts of no more than $20,000 and then refer to separate statements for the explanation, which is essentially the compromise we came to the last time we had a similar proposal before us.
Okay. Very good. Other thoughts? I mean, I share Commissioner Weintraub's views on this, and I think that the Vice Chairman has set forth a means by which we could provide a clear answer and maintain somewhat different legal analyses. But other commissioners' thoughts on this? Commissioner Von Spakovsky?
Well, I wasn't here when the Berman Doolittle AO was issued, which was a very similar issue. But if I'd been here, I would have joined the concurring opinions of that time Vice Chairman to Honor Commissioner Mason, which said that the plain meaning of the statute is that the soft money ban applies to federal and non-federal elections for public office. It doesn't apply to non-candidate elections. I support Draft B. And my suggestion would be, since I think we otherwise can't get an agreement on either Draft A or Draft B, is that we do provide an answer, but a short answer, very similar to what was provided in the Berman Doolittle, and that we then write concurring opinions on the legal analysis that each of us has brought. But I do not think that the opinion, I don't think the opinion should say, and that is the primary opinion, not the concurring opinion of the commissioners. I don't think the primary opinion should put a $20,000 limit in it. I think it should say that under the specific facts that have been provided in the request, you know, the commission's concluded that you can engage in this activity, but the commissioners have differing opinions on what the legal analysis is provides the reason you can do it, and they have different opinions on whether it's unlimited or whether it's limited to $20,000, and they have to govern themselves accordingly.
Commissioner Weintraub?
I can't support an opinion that says, you know, yes, you can do this, and different commissioners have different views as to how much, because I think if we just say, yes, you can do this, that gives them a lot more running room than I would be. Because I don't think, yes, you can do this. I think, in general, you can only do this up to $20,000 and from individuals. I don't think, as a general rule, they can do this. They can only do it subject to that exception. And I think it would be useful. I understand that there are at least two commissioners who would go further than that and would say, you can do whatever you want. But there isn't consensus for that. And I think it would be useful to the requester to get a clear answer from the commission that says everybody agrees you can do this up to $20,000 from individuals, and then there would be concurring statements from some that said, we think you could do even more than that. But I think that would provide clearer guidance to the requester and would be something I could approve.
Other thoughts, suggestions? Commissioner Walther?
So that's an arrest, and I agree that I could support the $20,000 limitation as well.
Okay.
Without having to reach an opinion today on the issue of where we got there.
Okay. Exactly. Vice Chairman Mason?
I just wanted to check with the Office of General Counsel if they feel like looking at the Berman Doolittle precedent and our discussion, you could draft an opinion that simply said the commission agrees that you can do this by individuals and up to $20,000, and referring them to concurring opinions for the legal analysis.
Counsel?
The Berman Doolittle advisory opinion literally had one sentence of analysis, which simply said that in that instance you could proceed and you were not restricted. So I think we'll just essentially copy that and come out to the different result and then refer them to the exemption in 300.65 1B, I believe it is, which allows the $20,000 from individuals.
Well, I think that may be what we want to avoid. I think if the opinion simply states the result and refers to the concurring opinions for the rationale, it would be preferable, because we're trying to get over the issue of whether it is in connection with an election in the first place.
When I first arrived here, my staff and I toyed around with the possibility that the agency should begin answering advisory opinion requests with simply the word yes or no. And this is maybe this one we could answer just by saying maybe or kinda. And then refer to the
this much.
My sense is that there's clarity that this activity is that to the degree that they raise money from individuals in sums up to $20,000, that there is no ambiguity that they are permitted to do that by law, and that there is not a consensus upon whether they can do raise sums above that from individuals.
That's correct, and that's what I'm trying to reach for.
And I guess the question is, is this discussion sufficiently clear that were we the commission to instruct staff to prepare such a response that they believe that they have the guidance now to line those words up in rows that say that?
I think based on the last comments, we do.
Okay. Very good.
And as to Commissioner Von Spakovsky, I hope he'll join in this in approving this motion. I don't think the result really would be any different either way. If we provided a more general answer, I think my colleagues that are to my right are correct that this would easily be interpreted as saying you could ask for corporate money and you could ask for $100,000 and so on like that. But in looking at the underlying legal analysis, they would see there was some risk if they did that, because if we do it this way, they'll get the assurance that they can do it, a fairly substantial amount of fundraising, in fact, practically very large amount of fundraising. And they would also see that there's a legal analysis out there that if they chose to raise money in even larger sums and from other sources, they wouldn't have the protection of an advisory opinion, but that there would not be a firm resolution either way as to what the result of that activity would be.
Good. Time for motion.
Mr. Chairman, I move to instruct the staff to draft a brief advisory opinion as discussed, and commissioners will issue concurring statements.
Very good. The Vice Chairman is so moved. Discussion on the motion? Hearing none, all in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? Madam Secretary, the Vice Chairman's motion has been adopted by a vote of 5-0. Council, thank you very much. The next item on our agenda involves draft advisory opinion 2007-25, Holland & Knight, LLP. We have both Albert Kiss and Ron Catwan from the General Counsel's Office.
Mr. Chairman?
Mr. Vice Chairman.
I don't want to cut off Mr. Kiss's opportunity, but as I understand it, we have no further submissions from the requester here.
That's correct, Mr. Vice Chairman.
As I recall, Mr. Chairman, we were 3-2 or something
correct.
Like that last week, and I had laid out some concerns that I had that the requester might be in some legal jeopardy, and pointedly said to them that the effect of a delay would be to allow them to submit any ex parte communication that would suggest a possible resolution. I didn't have a perfect one then. I haven't had one since. They haven't cared to speak, and so my suggestion would be to inform the requester that the commission was unable to render an opinion. I'd be happy to so move.
Okay. It seems like a reasonable outcome to me. I look around to see whether other commissioners seem to think that would be a reasonable way to proceed. Okay. Mr. Vice Chairman, please.
So moved, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Vice Chairman is so moved. Any discussion on the motion? Hearing none, all in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? Madam Secretary, the Vice Chairman's motion has been adopted by a vote of 5-0. Council, thank you.